Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
No matter how successful you are, you will miss so many parts about being 22.
Oh, yeah.
And the one thing I said is I know for a fact that if I was 22, I would have seen the new Blade Runner movie. Like, that would have been a thing. That would not, this much time would not have passed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, there was, I was never more up on my movie viewing than when I was in my mid-20s, you know, with no job in L.A. Come Sunday afternoon, I had seen every new movie that had come out, even if it wasn't something. I remember going to see, like, The Saint.
Yeah.
The one with Val Kilmer, and even remember thinking, why am I doing that? Oh, that's why I have nowhere else to be right now.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this special episode of the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast. In this episode, you'll hear an exclusive chat recorded in the late night offices between Seth Meyers and comedian Patton Oswalt. They geek out over comic books, cult movies, and how the entertainment industry has changed since they started out. Now let's go to Seth and Patton.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Late Night Podcast. I'm here with Patton Oswalt. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. Hey, guys. I'm here with Seth Meyers, the host of Late Night with Seth Meyers.
I am very happy to see you. We haven't seen a lot of each other, but we're now working together ostensibly.
It's weird. I don't see you, but your fingerprints are all over the stuff that we get to read on that show and in the characterizations and dialogue. I can go, oh, that's probably, that has
less than you would think. That's very kind.
But really?
Mike O'Brien, who created this show, AP Bio, that you were one of the stars of, it really is Mike and that incredible writing staff. So
yeah.
I mostly just get the scripts, I think, the way you do and read them and I'm just delighted.
That guy, McCracken, is
yeah.
it Mike?
Charlie, right?
Charlie McCracken.
Yeah.
Such a funny writer, and so funny at that first table read that they kind of wrote him into the show is
yeah.
that horrifying coach, Coach Novak.
This is, we understand, by the way, that we're talking about a television show that has not been on the air yet, but it's called AP Bio, and it'll be on NBC in February.
Yes.
And that was an amazing thing. We did a table read for a show, and a friend of the creator came in just to read a few lines, and was so funny that people who ran the network said, that guy...
Yeah, that's your coach right there.
That should be the coach.
So good.
We were talking about the film Tremors right before we started.
Right before we started, because we're now filming. We shouldn't talk too much about AP Bio because people have no frame of reference. But
yes.
We were able to get Michael Gross to guest star in the upcoming episode. Michael Gross.
Most famous from Family Ties, yes.
Very famous from Family Ties as a very almost painfully touchy-feely liberal, kind of sensitive male. And he's in a movie called Tremors where he plays the most frightening right-wing NRA nutball. He's married to Reba McEntire.
Yeah.
And there's this great scene where he and Reba, because the Tremors is about giant tunneling worms under the ground in the desert. And it stars Fred Ward and Kevin Bacon. And there's a great scene where this worm comes through their wall and Reba McEntire and Michael Gross kill it with all, they have all this firepower and they just it takes a long time, but they kill it. And then one of the funniest lines, and they cut to Fred Ward, and because everyone is treats Michael Gross like the town nut.
Yeah.
And they cut to him, and he goes, I guess we can't make fun of his lifestyle anymore, like, because he just saved us. And he's actually upset, like, oh, well, I don't get to do that anymore.
The least surprising thing about that is that you, Patton Oswalt, could pull back from a movie in the 80s and remember specific lines and moments. You are one of my favorite things about you. I remember when we first met, we talked about things we both liked. I really enjoy this about you. You love things. You love books, you love comics, you love movies, you love music.
Yes.
Do you still have time, even with all the work you do on your own material, to consume other material?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't get to download as much stuff because now I'm uploading things, which mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the arc of any creative person. You download for inspiration, and then you start uploading your what inspired you, and then you still try to download as much as you can. I just don't have the time in the day to do it. And now there's so much stuff to get and get into, to quote Bikini Kill, or I'm sorry, Le Tigre. But, you know, so yeah, I was able to see The Handmaid's Tale, but I haven't seen Man in the High Castle yet.
Right.
And I saw The Florida Project. I haven't been able to see Blade Runner 2049 yet. So the stuff that when I do find time to see something, if it's really good, it's like giving a saltine to a starving man. And if it's really bad, it's enraging because I only had that window of time. How dare you not be great?
Which I'm not instantly enraged, I'm enraged at the end, is the purely okay that you give 13 hours to, or 13 episodes to, or whatever it is.
Right. Right.
When it's over, you realize, oh, that was... There's just not enough time to waste on the okay.
Yeah, and I'm amazed now when the okay still gets made. When the okay exists in 2017, it reminded me when I lived in San Francisco, if you would eat at a mediocre Chinese restaurant or any kind of Asian food, it was fascinating. How is this place open? Because San Francisco has the best Chinese food restaurants you've ever been to. Each one of them is this stellar new experience. So to run into like a mediocre, you know, something you'd get in a strip mall, but it's open and thriving in the city. Like, how does this exist?
Yeah.
Are they selling drugs? Like, how is this shouldn't exist right now? So yeah, when stuff like The Handmaid's Tale or Preacher is on television, and then there are other shows where you're like, how did money get put into this?
Let's talk about Preacher for a minute, because I think the first time we met, we talked almost exclusively about comics.
Yeah,
I will make the leap that you were a huge Preacher fan when it came out.
Yes. Yeah. I was a huge fan of the graphic novels.
Yes.
And then I was really, really surprised when they did the first season, they used them as a leaping off point rather than let slavishly film every panel the way that it is, which I think is what killed The Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
He literally tried to, it's like, no, you need to adapt it. So, and then this second season, of which, again, I've only been able to see the first two episodes of, and the rest is sitting in my DVR queue, but the second episode, it's called The Mumbai Sky Tower, one of the best hours of TV I've ever seen. It's because I've never seen something be that violent, but also heartfelt, to where you're almost tearing up at the end how sweet it is. It's the weirdest combination of tones, and they pull it off.
I have... I watched the first season, thought it was wonderful.
Yeah.
Thought they nailed it with the casting, particularly Cassidy. I don't know that guy's name off the top of my head. Irish actor, right? He must be.
Dominic. Oh, God.
No, not. That's. Yeah. This is.
Oh, no. Sorry. Yeah, the vampire.
Yeah.
The vampire. Cassidy, who is that guy? He is right out of the comic. Like,
that
they found a guy that looked like the model for that character.
And
he's a great actor.
Do you still have time to read comics at all?
Yes, every week I do. Because because I read so much, I am a fast reader now.
Yeah.
So I can get my weekly stack, and you know, they're little chapter things, and I can breeze through them.
So still buy the hard copies?
Yes, I will buy the actual paper copies, and then when I'm done with them, I will leave them somewhere for someone else to find, if I can. Like, if I'm in a coffee shop or something, someone like, oh, comics to read.
Because I've been reading comics on the app. And it's it does take a little bit of the fun out of it.
Exactly.
It's very helpful. It's very convenient. I think the app, Comixology, has done a great job. But I do kind of miss that joy.
I've had to go to Comixology sometimes when I'm on the road, mm-hmm. and especially the smaller publishers like Oni Press or Dynamite, where they just say, we don't carry that. And then why did I immediately go to a Southern accent
That's
for the town that doesn't
fair.
Have it? Yeah. Oni Press, not in this town, son.
Like, because I do believe that the comic book shop in a deep red state is not full of the sort of slack jaw people that you're implying.
Exactly, yeah. And I have read stuff on the Comixology site.
We only have the Batman.
Yeah, we got DC and maybe Marvel if we're in a good mood. But yeah, that's all they... So yeah, I've had to do that. And you're right, it's like, I want to turn the pages.
Do you go to the same... Do you have a comic shop that you go to every week?
Well, yeah, but LA, because LA is so sprawled out, and depending on where I am in the city, so if I'm on the east side, it's House of... It's Secret Headquarters. If I'm in the Valley doing voiceover, House of Secrets. If I'm over in West Hollywood, it's Golden Apple or Meltdown. Mm-hmm. Wow, the ladies, I know that this is an amazing part of the podcast right now. When he started mapping out his exact comic book stories, that's when
city.
I... Ooh.
That's how I'm at the city. I'm glad to hear, because I sometimes will talk to people who are, they go to the same shop and the store pulls for them.
They have pull boxes, but see, I don't want to do that because sometimes I can't be in town long enough and it's unfair because that might end up costing them a sale.
I also enjoy, for me, it really brings me back to pulling them off the rack. I do kind of want to see it and say, oh.
It's the one place, there's a little bit of Hollywood inside baseball, it's the one place where if you want a better percentage chance of seeing a celebrity, go to a comic book store on a Wednesday, because it's the one task celebrities will not give to their assistants to do.
Yeah.
Because they're always afraid they'll miss something.
Sure.
So they make sure that, so I remember being in Golden Apple back in the day, and you would see, you know, Sam Jackson would be in there getting his stuff, because like, nope, I gotta go pick it up myself.
I remember being sick and middle school and sending my mom with a list, and it would never turn out the way
you
want.
And you would always, And you had to fire her, right?
And yeah, that was
it. That was rough.
We speak a little, but less.
It's tense when you're at events.
that's
pretty much it.
I don't know if you feel this way as well. I was at a panel the other day where someone said, if you give any advice to a 22-year-old who wanted to do what you do, you know, what would you say? And, you know, so I sort of gave, I feel like the kind of boilerplate advice you would give, but the one thing I wanted to remind everyone is, no matter how successful you are, you will miss so many parts about being 22.
Oh, yeah.
And the one thing I said is, I know for a fact that if I was 22, I would have seen the new Blade Runner movie. Like, that would have been a thing. This much time would not have passed.
Oh, I was never more up on my movie viewing than when I was in my mid-20s, you know, with no job in L.A. Come Sunday afternoon, I had seen every new movie that had come out, even if it wasn't something. I remember going to see, like, The Saint, the one with Val Kilmer, and even midway through going, why am I doing that? Oh, that's right, I have nowhere else to be right now.
So
I would go see all these movies. I remember I saw on the same weekend Judge Dredd, the Stallone one, and First Night, that one with Sean Connery and Richard Gere.
Yeah,
on the same weekend. Maybe even on the same night, like, because I have their movies, new movies.
Yeah,
I'll go see these.
Being an out of work actor or comedian,
whatever,
like that structure of got to show up, got to see the story.
I got to know,
and then how?
Yeah, there was that. I what's weird. I say the same thing to people in their 20s that are like, how do I get to where you are? I'm like, you will in one way or the other, or you'll get to whatever the new version of where I am when you're in your 40s. It won't look like this. It'll be different. Like, my idea of success when I was 20 didn't look like this, because I couldn't imagine that this world would exist. But I go, you will miss that thing when you were in your 20s and you if you went on stage and went down in flames, it didn't help your career. It didn't hurt your career.
Yeah.
You were allowed to just mess around and make discoveries and be, you were allowed to be anonymous for a while. Actually enjoy that. You will miss that because pretty soon you're going to start being scrutinized and you can't go up and have a blah set because someone will be, you know, now you're in a world where people are like, oh, this guy, he's, you know, that set sucked.
Do you think it seems scrutiny across all fields has increased because of things like technology and the very easy way to record. Do you feel very lucky now, seeing how it is for young comics today, having come up when you did?
Yes. There is nothing that I fall to my knees and thank God for is the fact that I had the 6 years in the wilderness where nobody was filming me, or, you know, I was allowed to go through all of my phases of trying to figure out who I was on stage. I went through some embarrassing phases. And I got it out of my system, and I wasn't being recorded forever, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I almost think the opposite of Andy Warhol's quote is true. I think in the future, everyone's going to be allowed to be obscure for 15 minutes, and then you're going to be pushed back into your own reality. Right. You know, like, you'll have 15 minutes where no one's looking. That's all you'll be given.
Yeah.
So, on the one hand, I'm envious of young comedians because they have such easier access. But I don't envy the fact that any move they make is permanent, or can be permanent and then needs to be. Although, for all we know, that'll create a new generation of people with the strength to shake off old personas, and which we don't have. You know, we tend to calcify, I think, maybe a little quicker because we didn't know anything else. Yeah. And they'll be more fluid. And because of it, again, every obstacle that every generation has is overcome with new forms of creativity. So for all we know, this is an obstacle that our minds can't imagine getting over, but someone will be creative enough to get over that.
Well, that's the way I felt about Mel Brooks talking about how today he couldn't make Blazing Saddles. My thought is, but if Mel Brooks was around today, his brain, which is obviously this genius comedy brain, if he was the same age today, he would figure out a way to do something as good as Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
It wouldn't necessarily be that, but
it would be, he would figure out a way. He would look at whatever the new paradigm is and find a new way to be shocking.
Right.
But he was where he needed to be at that time. And the other thing that he forgets is that the reason that first string of movies that he made, The 12 Chairs, The Producers, Blazing Saddles, and Young Frankenstein, the reason that those four are such classics is because he was making satires about things he loved.
Yeah.
He loved working on Broadway, and he loved these sleazy producers. So that movie is a love letter, as offensive as it is, but it's coming from love, and that's what kind of softens the blow. And Blazing Saddles, he's a obsessive Western fan. But if you love something, truly love something, you will not be able to not notice flaws in it. Because, you know, stuff you hate, if you hate something, you just dismiss it and never think about it again. But if you love something, you will go, why is John Wayne's character? They're all such racists. Like, I know they're heroic, but they're really doing awful things. And so it was the same thing as when Joss Whedon and his writing partner did Cabin in the Woods. These two guys had to reconcile the fact that they love all these 80s slasher movies, and they're horrifically misogynistic and nihilistic. So how do they... So then they made Cabin in the Woods to work out those problems of, this thing I love has got a lot of problems with it. How do I work this out?
Do you find your best comedy comes from criticizing things you love as opposed to criticizing things you dislike?
The comedy that finally broke me through was when I started talking about stuff that I love rather than stuff that I thought was stupid.
Is Star Wars a good example of that?
Oh, absolutely. Star Wars was that was the one where, you know, I was struggling with the fact that this was a thing that formed me and formed my opinions of what was cool and what was noble, and then I'm watching a thing get dragged into this cash grab, and so how do I reconcile the two things? That both of those things, it's the Thomas Harris quote that typhoid and swans all come from the same place. You know, Empire Strikes Back and Attack of the Clones come from the same mind. How do I reconcile this? So, you know, so coming at it from, I love this and there's a problem with it, I think that's it that really pushed me through to a different level.
How old is your daughter now?
She's 8.
Do you,
eight, is, 5 years sober. God bless
her.
Oh,
my God. Yeah, that's great. Because I did not. I think a lot of us didn't think that would
No,
take.
I mean, a lot of false starts, but I think it's going to take now. Yeah, yeah.
So, do you... Obviously, you love all these things. You have a lot of passion in the kind of movies you like and the kind of books you love. Mm-hmm. Do you guys have any crossover yet, taste-wise?
We don't have crossover in any specific thing that we're into, but we definitely have crossover. I'm seeing this now in how she becomes obsessive with a new realm. So, you know, she was that way with My Little Pony. Then it's kind of, she was that way with Frozen mm-hmm. and My Little Pony. Now she's that way with the Harry Potter books, and she's like, so I see it's the same spark, it's just different fuel. You know, if she had been 8 years old in 1977, she would know everything there is to know about Star Wars. A friend of mine got a hold of an actual 1977 print of Star Wars.
Wow.
The one, it didn't say Episode 4. Remember the original, it wasn't A New Hope, it was just Star Wars, and then the scroll started. That's how original this was. And so we rented out a screening room, and all my friends, all the nerd dads, had all their kids in. We made goodie bags, and we're going to show them Star Wars, this movie that meant everything to your dads. And half the kids lost their minds, and the other half, which included my daughter, were like, yeah, it's all right. They wanted to run around with their toy. They didn't like, they're just talking. They're all sitting there talking.
Do you, when you have your daughter with you, for anything that you remember liking, and you have a good memory for it, so mm-hmm. I imagine you're less surprised than others would be. I feel like I'm going to be surprised when I say to my son, you have to watch Star Wars, and then I'll watch it and say, oh, okay, this is a little less exciting than I remember.
Yeah, well, and watching it through an 8-year-old eyes now and seeing the, you know, and also I had to, it was also through my eyes, which have since Star Wars seen The Road Warrior, The Matrix, the first Terminator, yeah. like and John Woo's early films that, you know, stuff that was inspired by Star Wars, but then people kept building. I'm like, oh, no, I can see how this doesn't quite. You know, there's this long, I love that, the scene at the farm when Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru are just having this long conversation about Luke, and you know, and then in the background, just this robot comes wheeling in as if to remind people, we know, we'll get back to the robot. We're sorry, they're talking, and this little thing just like remind you, it's still a science fiction film. It was so funny.
Yeah,
yeah.
That I remember to some degree because I was a film major at college And
where did you go to college?
Northwestern. But,
you know,
when somebody shows you, a very enthusiastic teacher shows you Nosferatu and tells you how, but it's boring.
Yeah.
It's
boring except for a couple of, and you can show them out of context, because I remember that movie when I was 5. I was shown that movie when I was 5 years old.
Who thought
this was a good idea? I was living in Tustin Meadows, California. It was 1974. And they had a Halloween day at the library for the kids. So we made cookies. And an adult with every good intention was like, oh, it's this old silent movie. That's, you know, that's fine for kids. And they projected it. It was a little 8mm. Remember there was an 8mm market? That was video rentals. And they projected it on the wall, and it terrified all of it. And I had nightmares. Because that movie, it's boring now because it's cut together like dream logic. Like no scene follows the next.
Right.
And it's very jarring. But for a little kid who still experiences the world like dream logic, it was like that thing is going to come out of that little square and come after me. And it just freaked me out.
I feel like I had a library screening of, I'm going to get it wrong, Something Wicked This Way Come.
An early in that period of Disney films where they were kind of experimenting with like Watcher in the Woods, and they would do some darker stuff then.
And it was really haunting.
It's the opening when that carnival rolls into town is really unsettling. Jonathan Pryce with that, yeesh.
There was another one I had to look up recently because I just remember being haunted. I feel like it was a TV movie. It was a horror movie called The Scarecrow, maybe?
Dark Knight of the Scarecrow.
Thank you.
Oh, God.
It was just a TV movie.
I know, and it's terrifying.
Yeah.
It's really scary.
Yeah.
That thing is really messed up. I mean, the original, what's the other TV movie? Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah.
Karen Black and that little fetish doll.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And those, I feel like those aired at 8 p.m. on a Sunday or something.
It was the ABC Sunday night movie. Yeah. And then they would do these little, and so every now and then they would do one that would really creep you out. Steven Spielberg's first movie was an ABC Sunday night movie.
Was that the car one? Yeah.
The truck chasing Weaver, which is terrifying.
I don't think I've ever seen Duel.
Oh, my God. It's so scary. And you can see, like, this guy is going to be a great, because it's just a truck chasing a guy through the desert, and it's, and you never see the driver, but the driver's there, but you never see his face. So it's just this truck, and it won't stop. And it just appears. It's like the shark in Jaws. Mm-hmm. In fact, when at the end, spoiler alert, Dennis Weaver gets the truck to drive off a cliff, and that's how he drives. And the as the truck is going down, there's this roar as it's going down. It was the roar of seems to put the Creature from the Black Lagoon's roar over the truck dying, and he puts the same roar when the exploded shark is sinking at the end of Jaws.
Oh, wow.
The same sound, yeah. So he just had that.
I'm going to close by talking about another movie that no one will know that I just saw. Chuck's made me think about it. I just saw Merlin, the Roy Scheider. Is that what it was called?
Oh, Sorcerer.
Sorcerer, Merlin. I can't
Merlin.
Believe I called it Merlin.
God bless you.
Yeah.
Well, that movie.
Sorcerer. I can't believe I called Sorcerer Merlin.
Did you see it on like the, because the new high def DVD just came out. Is that where you saw it or where did you see it?
I think I downloaded it on iTunes.
I went to a screening with William Friedkin. This was at the Arrow out in Santa Monica.
Got it.
You know, that movie, because he had done, it was French Connection.
Yep.
Exorcist.
Yep.
So the big summer movie in 1977 was, oh, Friedkin, Sorcerer.
Yeah.
This is going to be huge. So they had it, there's very, very, and he talked about this at the start. They had it booked at the Man's Chinese. This is their summer blockbuster. And then they're going to run it for 2 weeks, and then we got this Star Wars thing. We're just going to run it for you, and then put Sorcerer back in there, and here comes the bucks. And Sorcerer was this notorious. It's a remake of The Wages of Fear.
Yeah.
Very slow, tense. It's a brilliant film.
It's a brilliant film. But for those who haven't seen it, you think Sorcerer might sound like a sci-fi movie.
Or supernatural, because like, oh, the guy that made The Exorcist. Sorcerer. Yeah. Oh, great. This will be great.
And it's about guys driving trucks.
Roy Scheider's yelling in a truck. They have to drive trucks full of nitro through the mountains.
Yeah.
To this oil well fire. And it's,
so it's a lot of, this truck is stuck. Let's
Or look, we can't drive more than 5 miles an hour. We'll explode. And you're like,
so it's really
okay,
slow truck driving.
I guess.
But it's great.
Yeah. I even joked with William Friedkin on Twitter. This is years ago. I'm like, hey, I'm at Disneyland. The line for the there's no line for the Sorcerer ride. I'm really excited. Do you know about like it's just this 5 mile an hour ride where you're doing? But it was this summer where like this at Star Wars. Just yeah. Buried Sorcerer, and it messed him up for a little bit.
I bet. That's talking yeah. about a bad stroke of luck. But hopefully, for the people who listen to this, we'll all go check out Sorcerer.
And also a great Merlin. Score by Tangerine Dream. The soundtrack is incredible in
See,
that.
This is, I don't even know why I bothered bringing up.
No, I'm just saying it's
no,
a great.
This is great. Your attention to detail is fantastic. I'm very excited to talk to you on the show tonight.
Yeah.
Always so
I'll,
great.
I'll see you tonight, man.
All right. Thanks,
Pat. I'm going to go pound cookies in my dressing room. I'll be great. Nice and bloated.
We have a lot of them there.
I can't wait.
All right. See you, buddy.
All right. See you, man.
Our next guest is a Grammy and Emmy Award-winning comedian, actor, and best-selling author you know from The King of Queens and Justified and such films as Young Adult and Ratatouille. His new stand-up special, Patton Oswalt Annihilation, begins streaming on Netflix October 17th. Please welcome back to the show our friend Patton Oswalt. How are you?
Good, good.
Hi. Hi.
It's always such a delight to see you.
Yes.
We met in 2004.
Yes,
on
we did.
On the set of a film that not a lot of people have seen called See This Movie, ironically called See This Movie.
See This Movie.
Where we paid films. Look at the young, look how young we are.
Oh
a couple of
God.
Young film students.
Look at all the hope.
Yeah. This movie was so long ago, pictures were blurry.
Yeah, they really were.
Yeah. Yeah. That's before HD.
And that's John Cho right
that's,
there.
And John Cho, yeah.
There he is,
John
right
Cho
in the middle. Yeah.
I also, we're working on a show together. You're doing the hard work. You're a
yes.
cast member. On a new show called AP Bio that's going to be on NBC in February.
Yeah.
And you were here. Give it up for a show you haven't seen. Give it up for a show that is yet to be scheduled.
We could have just made that up.
Yeah, we could have made that
fun.
Up. That was a test.
Yeah, why not?
But you came out. There's a thing called Upfront. That's where we saw each other last.
And I'd never done Upfronts. Upfronts is where you come and you talk to affiliates and press about the show. And I did not know that it was a dawn till dusk, just nonstop. Gab Fest, where you're basically selling your product. So I didn't see you that day till the end of the night at that restaurant where we all got together. And so I was so happy to see you, but I had so been stuck in my head in selling the show mode that our conversation, I was so afraid afterward, I'm like, he thinks I'm psychotic. Because you were, it's like, hey, man, good to see you. It's great to see you, Seth. And this restaurant is fantastic. The food here is so wonderful. Like, I don't even remember what I said. It was just in that weird non-human way of, it was like I was trying to sell you on the wonder of hanging out with me, even though we were already hanging out.
That was not my take on it.
No, okay, good, good. Yeah. My God.
You and your co-star, Glenn Howerton, were on the red carpet. I remember us talking about this at the dinner. Because E! Was taught, they were interviewing people about the 10th anniversary of the Kardashians.
Yes, they were.
And you guys have a new show on NBC. So new, you're new to the network. You did not realize that E! And NBC are owned by the same company.
No idea. And so we're going down the carpet and talking to them. And then E! Says, hey, can we get your thoughts on the 10th year anniversary of Keeping Up with the Kardashians? And Glenn said, I would rather cut my scrotum off with a razor blade. And this is on camera, like they're talking. They're like, "Oh well, I mean, you know, it's you're both on kind of on the same network," and you could see Glenn's face realizing what he had just done, and then you could hear the gears grinding of him going. But 10 years is impressive, whether or not I want to talk about. Like, it was the plan, and I am beside him, like just trying. It was maybe the worst save I've ever seen. But it was beautiful. It was one of the best. Oh, I loved it so much.
So congratulations funny. On your special, Annihilation. You. Obviously, we saw in the clip, it's a little bit about, you know, the world we're living in now, but you also had an incredibly difficult year. Your wife passed away, and you talk about that at length. Certainly my condolences, our condolences. Yeah. The title, was it hard to pick the title, or was it...
It was, well, you know, I didn't really come up with the title until... I was a week away from doing the special because that's how it felt to me at that point in terms of the world. I felt like the world had been annihilated. And then in talking about what I'd gone through, I was taken back emotionally to April of 2016. And that was where I felt like I had been annihilated. There were months where I wasn't even sure if I was alive, basically. And then almost as a joke on top of those two very dark concepts was, you know, the comedian speak of, oh, I killed, I annihilated. So I thought, okay, I'll put that in there almost as an ironic, because I was so terrified of what if I go out and tape this special and it just bombs horribly and I'm not able to make this stuff funny. And so I almost put that in there as a reverse good luck charm, maybe.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Obviously, you know, for people who don't know, like when you do a special, you're working that material for so long, so many nights.
Yes.
Not only obviously are you working towards having a product that you're proud to show people, was it incredibly cathartic for you to go through that process of talking about this thing on stage?
Yeah, once I actually got on stage, it was horrible, the hours and minutes leading up to it. It got to the point I'm like, just let me go out there and tape this because the tension was killing me. And then once I got out there and it started going, and when you do a special, if you've really worked it, the special takes over and it's almost like you ride the material itself. That sounds very hippie-esque. I'm sorry about that, you... You know what you do, man? You catch a laughter wave, and you get on your smile surfboard.
Yeah.
And you know what you do? You ride it into Chuckle Beach. But I didn't know because I was so in my own head. Even doing, I'm like, what if I don't? What if the stuff doesn't take over and I don't, but it did. It's like, this is what I do. And it was this very, it was almost like the life force asserting itself going, yes, you've gone through all of this hell, but you're still a comedian and this is what you do. And it just, that felt really amazing to me. Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's wonderful to watch. You, your daughter, 8 years old.
8 years old now.
Halloween coming up. Does Halloween she have plans? Up.
She has huge plans. She has picked a very elaborate costume that we're still trying to put together that she told me. She goes, I know you're going on TV. Don't say my costume.
Okay, great.
Like you guys will blog about it or something, or, you know. But the thing about every year, her friend, she has this friend who goes to this very progressive hippie school in Los Feliz, where it's the kind of school that's like, we don't have walls, and like, we don't, instead of an A or an F, we give a sticker of a smiling pomegranate or a worried possum. Like, wait, what? You know, But they do this really cool Halloween carnival every year, and they and the kids, these, you know, grade school kids, put together a haunted house, and it's so charming. You go in, and they have, you know, they make hallways out of trash bags, and you go down the hall, and something jump, boo, and kids, ah! It's just, and I've taken my daughter since she was three, and she just jumps in my arms and hides her head, but I can hear her laughing. She's like, thinks she it's hilarious for her to be scared by this silly thing. But the last year we went, I don't know why this happened, the adults at the school decided we are going to help do the haunted house. So I go in with Alice, and there's a bunch of other kids, and the first thing that happens, we walked in, and this woman dressed like a witch pops out and says, "I've killed Harry Potter." And all of the kids go, "What?" And just like start crying. And then she has to start going, "No, but what happened was he used an amulet to save him. You'll see at the end." Like she has to then tell the whole story of the haunted. So instead of like a fun haunted house with werewolves and ghosts, it was we walked into a room and then adults just pitched bad movie sequels to us. I guess. And what really, really bummed me out was the first year I took Alice through the haunted house at the school, I saw the scariest thing I've ever seen by accident because, you know, again, you go down these halls and stuff pops out. So I turned the last corner and you know, that's where you go down the exit, this long hallway. And when I turned the corner, at the end of the hallway, as I turned, a kindergartner had gotten lost. And the kindergartner was wearing like an adult monster mask and it's tilted on his head. So it's this giant head and this little body and he's standing under a red light bulb. So I turned the corner and there's just this little like thing like at the end of this hall, like I my pants off. Like that's like, boom, it was so... I've never gotten over that. It was so terrifying.
Well, I hope you have a less terrifying Halloween. Always great to see you, buddy. Congrats on the special.
Thank you so much.
Patton Oswalt, everybody. Patton Oswalt, Annihilation begins streaming October 17th on Netflix.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me,
DJ Fuse,
and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.